The reason why I felt that this conversation on mind control was so critical is that I think a lot of people think mind control is like a parlor trick. You know, mind control happens in some kind of a formal setting, and it's easily recognizable for what it is, and that there's fanfare around it, and you know, it's like a hypnosis trick on a stage where you turn people into clucking chickens and stuff like that. I think are a lot of things that are going on for people that people are very frightened by. They're very stressed by what's happening in the world. The whole mind control topic for me is one that I think is very insidious. And I think that mind control has played a massive part in our lives for all of our lives to date. We're just starting to notice elements of it and the impact that it can potentially have if we're not paying attention. I think one of the important things is to look at how mind control works. Today, we live in a world that we're experiencing massive change. I mean, massive change, not just massive change to the individual, but massive change to institutions that we have relied on very heavily, pretty much all our lives. Banking systems, for example, the whole notion of, you know, CBDCs, what's happening with bank collapses and impending bank collapses, the material that was put out by David Webb on the Great Taking. There are all kinds of things that are profoundly overwhelming in terms of what we hold as normal or something that should be going on a regular basis. So our historical perspectives and our ways of engaging no longer stand. They're no longer stable and encouraging of our participation. So there are all kinds of issues around fundamental things that are attached to safety, to our sense of personal safety in our individual and collective environments. And the typical formula that we have used to be able to calm ourselves in those situations are no longer viable for us. So not only is change prevalent and dominant, like there's more change than there is not change, right? There's more changing in our worlds than there is change, stuff that's repeating. It's moving faster than we can easily adapt. Like we're really struggling as a collective, as a global collective, we're struggling to keep up. So it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the influx of illegal immigration in Western value-based countries. And now things that are surfacing around that show intent with that immigration, and that the vast majority of the people coming into these Western countries are fighting age men. The things that are happening in different states across the US, which I don't think we're far behind in this country, of offering these men citizenship if they will join the military. Now, that's a pretty scary thought, because, you know, one could probably surmise that they would be less concerned about shooting you than would be someone who's been part of this country for generations, that the military and the police force will not fire on its citizens. And yet we saw through the truckers situation when they brought in military personnel from God knows where, I don't know, their insignia were not recognizable. And they were literally riding horses through crowds of people and causing harm, because really, do they care, right? In many ways, the training wheels are off the bike for us. So it would be nice to be able to have lots of space and time to be able to ponder this and think about it and study it and maybe do a report or two about it, maybe watch some documentaries, etc. But I think we have to be able to get on the bike and ride. And I think we have to be able to do that effectively sooner rather than later. So in many ways we are, you know, I think the bicycle thing is an interesting metaphor, because we really are perpetually, and my belief intentionally, being kept off balance. We're having a very difficult time maintaining any sense of equilibrium in our family systems, in our educational system, in our religious systems. It doesn't really matter what it is. there are things that are going on that I believe are intentionally occurring in order to destabilize the construct of the context that is familiar to us. And that context is constantly being shifted from the outside in. So things are happening that are affecting the way that we hold not just the thing, but the way that we hold where and how the thing fits into the larger experience of the quality of our lives. The very ability to sustain our quality of life is being significantly challenged. So this onslaught of wave after wave after wave of what one might call challenges, but what I'm calling assaults on our existing structures of beliefs, values, and attitudes is really nonstop. So both in terms of density, intensity, frequency, and speed at which one wave follows the others. It's like, you know, having contractions. So the contractions are increasing in intensity and they're coming faster and faster and faster. So as a metaphor, we as a global culture, as a global species, we are birthing something here. But we don't really know what that is. And in the midst of all of this, one of the things that I became aware of some months ago is the increasing prevalence of this notion of what's being called fifth generation warfare. And fifth generation warfare is not about tanks and bullets and bombs and stuff like that. It's the battle for your mind. So fifth generation warfare is really looking at intentionally finding ways and mechanisms to infiltrate the structure of thought and redirect it. And sometimes that infiltration is subtle and non-invasive. It's positioned as invitational. It's repetitive in nature. If you think about mainstream media, same message over, you know, during the quote unquote pandemic, how many people died today? How many people had positive COVID tests, which were useless? But anyway, it's another story. Day after day after day after day. So the repetition of the message, whatever the message is constant and you cannot escape it. No matter, you know, change the channel, you're still going to get the same message. So much of fifth generation warfare has been facilitated by the advancement of AI. So there are a lot of things that are now available to be engaged and activated because of the advancements of technology. The advancement of technology has allowed for being able to monitor and retain and interconnect vast, vast, massive amounts of data at phenomenal speeds. We were not able to do that 10 years ago. So technology has facilitated fifth generation warfare, meaning that when you go to get a mortgage at the bank, there's no person who's approving your mortgage. There's an algorithm. So your mortgage is being approved or denied by a formula from a computer. And that is increasing in its application, not decreasing. More and more militaries around the world are turning to technology, to weapons that can be used, but they make their own decisions. So their kill decisions are not passed through a human being somewhere. The technology itself, the AI, is making the decision to kill or not kill. So these are deadly force weapons. And the decision is completely out of our hands. So much of the attention focused on the power of AI and technology in general, I think, is intended to overwhelm. It's intended. We cannot keep up. If success equals vast amounts of information processed quickly, then we cannot compete with them. There's no way that we can calibrate for that. There's no way that we can retain that. And there's no way that the quantum biological device that we are processes that amount of environment behavior data, the where, the when, and the what, at those phenomenal speeds and seeks to find interconnectivity in those data points. That is the power of technology. So this technology, I think, is intended to overwhelm, and it forces incursions not only into our thoughts, but in the very structures of mind-brain functions. So one of the things that we are beginning to notice is that extensive use of technology, cell phones, you know, particularly your cell phone, because it's like it's an extension of your body, really, is actually changing the design of the brain. So the technology is already, as Yuval Noah Harari talks about, human beings are now hackable, meaning technology can now penetrate the neurological structures of the body and gather information from that. And there are also technologies that will dump data directly into your nervous system so that it alters your perception of your reality without your having noticed that you were exposed to something that did that. You just think that's you. Well, it's not you. So today we're going to take a look at that, and perhaps more fundamentally, we're going to look at, and I think this is the really, really important part. What makes us so vulnerable to attempts by others to shape how we move through the world? Why are we so susceptible to this? How have we become so mindless about the presence of that, about the intentionality of that? And to what degree do we pay attention to how is my mind working today compared to what do I need to pick up a Canadian Tire? Because I think our conversations with ourselves are much more focused strategy down than they are focused on what is my susceptibility to mind control techniques. And what are those mind control? Would I recognize one if I saw one? So what is mind control? My perspective on it is that mind control is an intention and the ability to shape how we define reality. And with that reality, how we perceive ourselves within it. Right? So it's not just the reality that I notice out there, but oftentimes oblivious to me, not us, because we live differently, but to most people, they notice what's out there. But oftentimes what they don't notice is that they're always making decisions about their value, their quality of presence inside those things that they're observing. So in other words, that last part really relates to, do I have the power to shape my own reality, or am I a victim to the intentions of others? And how often do we even ask the question? Most people don't pay any attention at all.